Are we just going through some of the prohibitions that are associated with Avodah Zarah, with idolatry? It seems to me that there's no area of the Torah that has so many mitzvos pertaining to it, and mitzvos that I would categorize as harchakos, things that are designed to keep you far, far away. So that with regard to, generally speaking, the Torah just gives you the basic commandment pertaining to something. And, for example, Shabbos, what constitutes malacha, work on Shabbos. And the gzeros, the decrees, so to speak, those enactments which are intended to protective, as protective devices, generally speaking, they're midrabbanan. That's the general rule. So they built a fence around the Torah to protect the person. A person shouldn't come too close. So there are many harchakos, things that keep you distant. So you shouldn't put yourself in a position of violation. The same is true with regard to virtually all of the commandments. It's very rare where the Torah has the law. That is to say, according to the Torah, you're not allowed to pull off a branch from a tree. That's one of the malachos. But the Torah itself is not going to enact all the particulars to keep you away from that, like riding a horse. That's the rabbis come along and do that, if they see fit. In the area of Avodah Zarah, however, there are numerous mitzvos, many, many mitzvos, and they're all designed to keep a person far away. So you see that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, a person has to keep, not just to avoid the phenomenon itself, but he has to avoid anything which draws him close. That is, he must maintain a tremendous distance from it. I'm just going to mention some of them. I don't know that this will be exhaustive or include everything. I'm just certain general categories of those things that are prohibited in fulfillment of this. And some of them may even seem strange or even far-fetched. So that's something we have to ponder. The fact that it may seem strange or far-fetched is completely irrelevant. We have to know what the Torah demands. He says, for example, in chapter 2, Halacha Beis, Halacha 2, Tzfarim Rabim Chibru Ovdei Chacham Bavodasa. The idolaters wrote many books describing the service, how to worship. Heich Ikar Avodasa, the principle, the fundamental principle of their worship, and the actions and statutes, their religion. God has commanded us not to read those books at all. Nor should we ponder, think about the, to think about their ideas, even if you're not reading the book, but you're obviously you've heard some of their ideas, and to think about it, to ponder it, below bedavar midvareha, or any matters pertaining to it. Then he says, "V'afilu l'stakel b'dmus hatzura, usur, even to gaze at the form of the image that they use is prohibited." Shenemar that says, "Al tifnu el ha'alilim." That's from this week's parsha. Do not turn, do not turn. That is, it's not enough. That's just turning. So you say, "What did I do? I looked at the you looked at their idol. What does it look like? The form, and so on and so forth." Or you read a book, you read a paragraph describing their, what they do, and even if you don't go and worship, or obviously if you went and worship, then there's nothing to talk about, then you're actually guilty of Avodah Zarah. So we're talking about a situation where you did these things, read one of their books, or you went to hear a lecture about Christianity or one of the religions, but you didn't do anything as a result. You just wanted to hear and think about it. That is the prohibition. And Uva Inyan Azen Nemar, he says, with regard to this, he says, Ufen Tidrosh Lelohehem, lest, he quotes another pasuk, lest you inquire after their gods, Lamor, saying, Echa Yavdu, how do they worship? A certain type of a religious curiosity. Shlo Tishal al Derech Avodasa, Hechi, that is, you're not permitted to inquire pertaining to the their worship. Afal pisha ain't ata avda, even though you don't worship it. Why? Shedavaze goreim li panos achareha, because this will cause you to turn after it, to become attached to it, to attract it. Velasos kamashe hein osin, and to do as they say, as they do. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Ve'esa kein gamani, and I too will do that. So you see that there are many, many prohibitions, as we'll see. A person is obligated to keep a tremendous distance, and as I said, some of the things that are prohibited don't seem to be that dangerous. And one might ask, well, are we so insecure about our own position? So insecure? When the Rambam then expands this to include not just Avodah Zarah, not just idolatry, but all heretical type of thinking, in which a person engages in all kinds of speculations of a heretical nature. And then he explains, he says, Mipnei Shadaito Shalodam Katsara, because a person has a limited mind. And not everybody is able to really understand the truth in a firm kind of a way. And if each person just would follow his own inclination, his own emotionalistic type of thinking, it would destroy the world, so to speak, because of the smallness of his understanding. Okay. Then he says that the mitzvah of avodas kochavim, of idolatry, is kineged ha-mitzvos kulon, is equal to all of the mitzvos. And he quotes a pasuk that v'chisishku, lest you err and do not perform all the mitzvos. And we learn out from the Tarsh Baal Peh, from the oral law, that this is talking about Avodah Zarah. Yet the Torah refers to it as not doing all the mitzvos. Thus you learn that whoever acknowledges idolatry, if he acknowledges the truth of idolatry, he's kofer b'chol ha-Torah kula. He denies the entire Torah, uv'chol ha-Naviyim, and all the prophets, uv'chol ma'ashen etztav ha-Naviyim, and everything that the Nevi'im were commanded in, may Adam be at sofa olam, from Adam, from the creation of man until the end of the world, so to speak. Then he says, v'chol ha-kofer b'avodas kochavim, whoever denies avodas kochavim, modeh b'chol ha-Torah kula, he acknowledges the entire Torah, u'v'chol ha-Nevi'im, u'v'chol ma'ashen etztav ha-Nevi'im, and in all the Nevi'im, and everything they were commanded, from Adam until the end of time. Fuhu ikar kala mitzvos kulon. This is the foundation, the fundamental of all the mitzvos. Now you see from this that it's not just a matter that we're prohibited, that it's prohibited to acknowledge the idolatry. It seems to me what he's saying is that there's a mitzvah to be kofir, to deny. As we will see, a person can raise the question that it seems like some of these things might be harmless. And that, to say that if I watch this, if I look at the art, the church art, then I'm going to be influenced and drawn after it, I think a person might say that seems far-fetched. And what, are we so insecure? In my opinion, the answer is yes. We're very insecure. Because idolatry is a very powerful emotion. It's compared to znus. Znus is adultery. It's promiscuity. Sensual. It's a sensual phenomenon. The whole world was steeped in idolatry. And it appeals to a person's emotions. And it corrupts a person's relationship with God. So the answer is, it's very dangerous. And a person should view himself as being extremely insecure, extremely vulnerable to the danger of idolatry. It has a tremendous pull on the emotions. It satisfies certain emotional needs that a person has, but nevertheless, which are false, they're false ideas, the whole thing is corrupt. So when there's no area of the Torah where we're more machmir, it's an interesting phenomenon that today very few people protested the Pope's visit to the shul, which I think is absolutely a violation of these principles, as we'll soon see. In my opinion, man, most people felt very good about it. It made them feel good. It made them feel secure that the Pope comes into a shul. Everybody's jumping the Pope. The whole world is jumping. It indicates a certain type of an approval. And I that's my personal opinion. Others can disagree with me and say I have no right to psychoanalyze. I'm giving you my sense of things. I will try and show why this violates the principles of the Torah, why such a thing is prohibited, in violation of the harchakos, the distancing that we must maintain and exposing people to the danger of Avodah Zarah. And I think that deep down, it provides people with a certain sense of comfort and security, because they look up to this person, and he's giving them, they think anyways, it appears to them like it's the seal of approval, and that itself is part of the danger. This is in chapter Yud, that's 10, in the middle of Dalet. It says, V'chein osel l'saper b'shivchon. You're not allowed to praise him. You're not allowed to praise an idolater. V'yafilu lomar kamano oved kachav mzeh b'tzuraso. What even to say how handsome this person is. That seems to be, that's afilu. That is, you definitely can't praise his actions. What a good person this is, what a kind person. But even something which would seem to be completely irrelevant, what does that have to do with it? The person's a good-looking person. So what, is that a reflection on his religion? What is, other things you would say, it's a reflection, yeah. That we understand. That's why I keep mentioning that for Jews, how important it is to avoid bad deeds, things that are perceived as being corrupt. Because then people will associate it with Judaism. That's Chilul Hashem. And to the contrary, when a person does good deeds, and it's clear that the person is wearing, a yarmulke or something, is associated with Judaism, so then you're sanctifying God because people associate it. That I can understand. Because how a person behaves is, generally speaking, an indicator to everybody about his religion. The reason why you can't praise the person, questions being raised, what if he's a brilliant mathematician? We're talking about someone who is known to be an Avodah Zarah, an Oved Avodah Zarah, rather, an idolater. Okay? The reason, in my opinion, it all has, all of these laws are based upon a certain principle that once you have admiration for someone, your whole attitude towards that person changes. And once your attitude towards him changes, then your attitude towards what he represents changes as well. And it may not be conscious. It could be, when it comes to Avodah Zarah, you have to take into consideration not just the conscious mind, but the unconscious and the way the mind works in terms of associations. It's a very interesting type of phenomenon. We ourselves are not always aware of it, of what's causing us to have a certain attitude towards someone. We're not, sometimes you like a person, but you can't say why. Sometimes you dislike a person, and you can't say why. And if you study it deeply enough, you may discover it's something in the unconscious. So unconscious factors play a role. And generally, we don't compartmentalize. Well, that depends who. A high-level individual that's completely firm in the renunciation of Avodah Zarah and completely committed to the idea of Yichud Hashem, so that's one thing. He can do these things. He can read the book and realize that it's absurd. And to the contrary, it strengthens his conviction. Or he could say, yeah, he's good in math, but he's a fool in religion. He can do that. Very few people can ask him that. Once you say he's brilliant in math, he's a wise person. And that's just the way it is. For most people, it's the association. They associate one thing with another. He's a smart person. Oh, he's doing it? Oh, so you're telling me that this religion is ridiculous? Why? He does it. He's a smart person. That's a very powerful factor. In my opinion, most people that I've encountered are very weak in this area. The area that when you tell people that the whole essence of Judaism is to uproot Avodah Zarah, it doesn't make an impact. Most people, I'm talking about Orthodox Jews, they'll hear it, whatever it is. Bottom line, they're very impressed by deeds. The reason why they have such a negative attitude towards Islam today is because of their horrible deeds. They're associated with violence and Islam, well, fascism debts. But if they were behaved in a completely different way and were kind and compassionate, then people would have tremendous respect for them. And by association, then they wouldn't hear, don't criticize their religion, they also have something, and so on and so forth. Not at that level where we appreciate the whole idea of Yichud Hashem, the unity of God, and the absolute abomination, that Avodah Zarah is an abomination. We're not on that level. It's kal v'chomer she'yisaper b'shvach ma'isav. How much more so that it is prohibited to praise the goodness of his deeds. O she'yachavev davim mid'vrayim. Or to cherish any of their statements, any of their words, or any of their things, to cherish it, to quote him, or to say something positive about any of their things. Shenemar v'lo sechanim. What does it mean, v'lo sechanim? Lo yilahem chen b'yeinecha. They shouldn't find any favor in your eyes. The usher, mipnei shegoreim, he says, the reason is, shegoreim lihidavek imo, because that breaks down the barriers, that creates an attachment, to become attached to him. V'lilmod mimasav harayim. And to learn from his bad deeds. Oh, but what do you mean bad deeds? He's a nice person. Yeah, but avodah zarah. Avodah zarah is not a nice thing. There's another interesting halacha that again will sound strange at first glance. And even trivial at first glance. But the Rambam says that you're not allowed to tell the person to meet me at that where that church is located. To use a church as a reference point, a landmark, so to speak. And why I mentioned this to somebody, it happens to be that when you're in my area, when you're coming towards the street, it's opposite a church. So she says she always told the person that it's right by that church, and then you make a turn. And now she sees that you're not supposed to do that. You're not allowed to do that. In my opinion, the basis of that is it's sort of akin to the idea. You can learn something from this. It's akin to the idea that you're not allowed to take a bribe. A judge is not allowed to take a bribe. And he's not allowed... If he's received some benefit from one of the participants from one side, so basically he's not permitted to be the judge because he's going to be partial to that side. It's not going to be truth. The Gemara has many cases like that, even the slightest thing, to show the greatness of these dayanim, of these judges, that he said, I can't judge your case. Why? Because a couple of years ago, I was passing through the town that you live in, and you held the door open for me. So it sounds like trivial. The slightest gesture of respect, if you understand the psyche, so already it predisposes you in a certain favorable kind of a way. So that's the way it is over here. If you derive any kind of benefit from something, as soon as you derive benefit from something, so you have a different kind of an attitude towards that phenomenon. It's not so terrible. You derived... It's an interesting kind of a thing. Basically, therefore, what I wanted to say, this is my opinion then, taking all of these ideas, that you're not allowed to praise an idol worshiper, and that you're not allowed to engage in discussions together, that you're not allowed to do anything which causes people to admire, to look up to them, it seems to me that what took place in that synagogue is a clear-cut violation of all of these things. First of all, you're receiving him with tremendous honor. And the very appearance, he's dressed up, he's not dressed like an ordinary person, he's dressed up with all of the robes and the crosses and the whole thing, and his whole appearance, and people look at him with that awe. And they created like a special kind of a service with the choir singing and to honor him. And they opened up the Aron Kodesh, they opened up the Ark in his honor. Now, all of that honor, and then the praises, the way the rabbi spoke about him, making some kind of comparison that his face is like an angel, just like the Keruvim and things of that sort. Now, what is the impression? First, it violates every rule, that the closeness, the drawing close, people gazing upon him, gazing from a standpoint of awe, and also the cross that he is wearing, his garments, and what he represents. And that whole experience, clearly, that we regard this person as being a great person. I don't see how that's possible. I think that's really a serious violation. And the danger, all those people who were there in that room, and then, of course, those who see it on TV, they had some teenagers presenting him with something, a special presentation, and they come up and he shakes their hand and they shook his hand. That, all of that has to do with everything that the Torah is commanding us against. That's partaking of the certain warmth from the person, and what kind of an impression does that leave on them? And I do believe that many Jews took tremendous comfort from those who disagree with me and think that it's a good thing and it'll reduce anti-Semitism, that it, and they don't see the danger of anything I'm talking about. It doesn't even register on the screen that this is an issue of Avodah Zarah. I think that from an emotional standpoint, they're very, very gratified. Because this is my opinion, critique of the Jews is that sense of insecurity, inferiority, and the need for the approval of the Gentile. And that's dogged the Jews throughout history, because, well, the persecution and all of that, no question. I maintain, I do believe that we should do things, whatever can be done, to improve the relations, but only to improve the relations in the manner that they ought to be improved. Now, there's nothing at all. There's no point at which we're going to be sharing religion together. Relations between two parties can be respectful relations and limited to certain things that do not involve any kind of a joining together for religious things, any kind of a mingling of the religious. So that it could be a civic thing, and we can be respectful. You act towards a person with respect. You have to show respect for certain people. Does that mean that you agree with their philosophy? Does that mean that you're giving any indication that you value? Do you share the same values? No. But in this society, you're just showing respect. You have, you know, you have a right to practice your religion. I have a right to practice mine. That we respect. We respect each other's rights, and that's it. Nothing beyond that. It's very difficult to get this up, across, because this makes for those people who are affected by this emotionally, that's the end of the story. Then they'll just justify. They'll just justify it, and very few people can think outside of their emotions and really become objective, put the emotion aside and look at it objectively and acknowledge that this is what the Torah says, even though it doesn't appeal to you. Yeah. The idea that it's wrong to maintain, for a Jew to maintain that Judaism is the true religion and the other religions are not true. Well, first of all, you have to make the point. I think another problem with this, that it's misleading, we have to present the truth to the world. In terms of Torah, we have an obligation to the Noahides. That is, that the Torah is for all people. The Torah is for all people, and for the Jews, the Tariag Mitzvos, the 613, for the Noahides, the seven Mitzvos, and so forth. So, by embracing, or by giving the impression, of course, they will defend it and say, we never affirmed Christianity, but to me, that's pretty clear that you do, by your body language. So I think it's demoralizing to someone who's struggling to free themselves from it and to become a Noahide. I think practically this tremendous, this is my opinion, again, these are matters of opinion. In this day and age, we have a tremendous problem of assimilation in America. A tremendous problem of intermarriage. And there's also the problem of the missionaries. We're always protesting against the missionaries and so on and so forth. When you do something like this, it's an emotional phenomenon, but doesn't it make it more... In other words, so what is so terrible then? A person will feel that it's not so terrible that somebody intermarried with a Christian, because look, the two of them together, it's like an endorsement. Even though it's not presented that way, on an emotional level, it diminishes the stigma, it seems to me. But that's how I think. I mean, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I mean, it just seems to me that the whole approach of the Torah and these harchakos is basic on that kind of thing, that one thing leads to another, and if you break down the barriers, you make it easier. If you're trying to convince a kid who's been affected by the missionaries, and you're trying to win him back, and he sees this, so he'll say, what's so terrible? I mean, if Christianity is that terrible, so what's he doing in a shul? You see what I'm saying? Doesn't it undermine your whole foundation? It makes it much more difficult to be absolutely vehemently opposed to any type of mission. Oh, no, they would say, well, no, that's for them it's okay, but for us it's not okay. I mean, does that really work? I mean, the person today will say, what do you mean? For them it's Christianity is okay, for Jews it's not? If Christianity is okay, and then you can be a good person and a Christian, so why can't I? Because I was born Jewish, I can't. And of course, you can make that point, but I think the strength of that point is seriously diminished, practically, emotionally speaking. That I think a person wouldn't feel that bad anymore. If you're putting a certain pressure upon him, you know, you're being swayed to Christianity, it's wrong. And then he sees this phenomenon, that whole sense of it being so terrible is diminished. It's a good point. My attitude of respecting and tolerance and so on and so forth is one which does not involve recognition, endorsement of the theology. Let me see if I can give an example, an illustration. With regard to Orthodox, Conservative, Reform Jews, in America today? It's a good question. Now, for example, like at the Adult Institute, where they invite Orthodox, Conservative, each one gives their classes. So, an ideal, my class is one of the most popular, and virtually all the people there, except my own people, are not Orthodox. So I show respect for the people. It's very, very clear that I don't endorse Conservative. I've made that point. I don't flaunt it in their face, but as a result of coming to my classes and what's the correct way and what Torah is, they all hear that. There's no one that has any doubts. But nobody feels diminished, disrespected as a person. I respect all Jews. And the other rabbis, I go up and say hello. I'm very friendly with them. I don't diminish them. But I don't, at the same time, I make it clear what is the true idea of Judaism. There's a way of doing it. I mean, I don't put anybody down, but I expound Judaism, and I respect your right. I'm not going to condemn you. Now, that's similar. It's not identical, but it's similar. What I would suggest, though, there's other religions. We're living in America, and we have to respect each other's rights. We have to respect each other's rights and be cordial. There's a certain protocol when you get together. If there's a civic function and I'm invited as the rabbi, I think I do this very well. As I said, I was a little bit of patting myself on the back that I go to this Memorial Day thing every year, and I'm very popular with the Gentiles because I prepare my words very carefully and say things that all people can relate to. And in fact, in the winter version, Veterans Day, I'm the only clergyman that's invited. They don't invite Christian clergymen. They just because they like me. At an event like that, there's a protocol. So you act respectfully, hello, how are you, this and that. You treat them in a manner of respect without crossing the boundary line and getting into religious, theological discussions. I just received in the mail at Renot an invitation to the interfaith meeting from the interfaith group that's out there. And I'm not going to go. Because that's an interfaith dialogue. That's based completely, if you engage in that, you're negating all the premises. Because you must be ascribing validity to their teachings. There's validity that, and we have some validity, and you have some validity, and we can learn from each other. To me, that's a denial of Torah Misinai. Aside from the fact is that you're not allowed to do it because of the Al-Tifnu factor. That is, as we've already learned, you're not allowed to discuss their religious practices with them. You're not allowed to do that. Because you may agree with something. It may make sense to you. You may like it. And that will affect your attitude. Once your attitude is affected, you're not the same person, even if you didn't worship it. It is your whole attitude and distance that you must maintain towards this phenomenon. Whether or not this type of thing reduces anti-Semitism is a good question. One can argue that it does not. One can argue, first of all, a lot of the people who favored this dialogue were disappointed in him, that he didn't go far enough. Because in spite of everything they say, he brought back the ancient, the prayer they used to have, which calls for they pray to their God that they should remove the blindness of the Jews. So a lot of Jews are very offended. See, once you get involved in interfaith dialogue, it can lead to a lot of hatred.
Did he say that in the show, that prayer?
Benedict brought back, the old Pope, part of his efforts to make amends with the Jews, he said that anti-Semitism is a sin, and there's a prayer that they had, a Latin prayer, which calls upon they call upon God or whatever they regard as God to remove the blindness from the eyes of the Jews. So Jews find that offensive because you're saying that we're blind, we're in a state of blindness. Now, ostensibly, if you've said that now that the Jews have a legitimate covenant, also, so then you so he removed that, and now Benedict brought it back. So a lot of people, why? Because a lot of Catholics were upset. That was their mass that they always said, and whatever the case, which I personally believe we shouldn't get involved in their religious. They should pray the way they want to pray. As long as you don't practice anti-Semitism, wish for whatever you want. Why do I care? Why am I bothered by it? It's another thing. To me, it seems like the Jews are bothered by these things because they need the approval. That means you're praying for us that the blindness should be removed and we should become Christians. Oh my God, so you're saying we're not, we don't have the... So what do I care if they believe that? There is an insecurity.
That would make us insecure. That would really make us insecure.
Yeah, well, what do I care? Pray for whatever you want to pray for. Now, if you say that, that leads to anti-Semitism, then that's something else. So do whatever you can do. If I was convinced, like I said, that the when they had the whole controversy about the Gibson movie, The Passion, that whole thing, and the Jews in America all worked up and tried to interfere, prevent it because it's going to lead to anti-Semitism and all that. So that very protest leads to anti-Semitism, because why are the Jews telling us what to watch? I said, don't get involved in that thing. America is a democracy, the freedom of religion. The Jews have never minimally been really hurt here. It's not going to lead, and didn't lead to any kind of harm. So the truth of the matter is that this type of thing of interfaith dialogue can increase anti-Semitism. Now, theoretically, you might say that when they see that the Jews need their approval and don't stick to the requirements of the Torah, and that's a weakness, that's possible. Even if you don't agree with that, but then once you have this type of thing, you start to negotiate. Oh, so why do you have this prayer? A lot of them are upset and saying, well, there are certain prayers that you have that we may not like, which is true. That Shehem Ishtachim L'Havarek, we say, they bow down to vanity and emptiness. But we bow down to the King of Kings. So, if you're going to start this business, who says it's going to reduce anti-Semitism? I personally don't think that this in and of itself is going to make that much difference. And whatever value it has, it could have been done not in a shul. It could have been done, let him make a declaration, and so on and so forth. See, there's many things he could do. What about supporting Israel? What about condemning the terrorists and all that, which he doesn't do? But you see, I don't want to get into that, because that's not my argument. I'm not criticizing him for not saying enough. Once I do that, then I'm saying that it's not because intrinsically the whole phenomenon is wrong. Then I'm implying that if he would say this, then it would be okay. That's not my approach. I'm approaching it purely on Torah ground, from the standpoint of endorsing Christianity, of endorsing what we would regard as Avodah Zarah. Which, you see, my thing is to keep our distance. Sort of like friendly neighbors, like you have a neighbor on the street. He could be a Christian, whatever it is, but you act respectfully. You act respectfully. You see him, hello, how are you, and all of that. Whatever, if he needs an older person, needs help across the street, you do that. That's treating them respectfully. Treating them respectfully. Why can't we have that? We're all neighbors, we're good neighbors. We're living in a community. I respect your rights, you respect my rights, but we don't get together and at the dinner and share our religion and this and that. That's where I draw the line. Boundary lines. I just want to add in general that I don't understand the whole foundation of the need for interfaith dialogue. It seems to be premised upon the fact that we can't have good relationships unless we get together and practice religions together and share. Why can't you respect somebody else's right to practice his religion freely? I mean, as long as he's not hurting anybody, obviously. I'm not talking about suicide bombers and terrorists, but as long as you're a peaceful individual and you obey the laws of the land, so you go to your church and I respect your right to do so. Why, in order for me to have respect for your religious rights, do I have to know what you're studying there? Why? And the same, respect my right. I have a right to practice my religion. What difference does it make what I'm practicing, what I believe? Right. As long as I'm not harming anybody. And it's not a threat to anyone, so then I don't see the premise. I have no need. I respect everybody's right in this society to practice their religion, as long as it's not a cult or it's hurting anybody. I mean, where you have that whole, the Mormon thing, they just, you know, in Texas with these women, the polygamy, and they had many children, and the issues of abuse, so there, that's a different story. That's because of the abuse factor. So the government has a responsibility to protect the citizens. That's something else. But if you eliminate that type of thing, and it's not harming anybody, so that's your right. It's your business. It's privacy. Privacy. I think that the interfaith thing really is contrary to the whole notion of privacy. People use today the privacy thing to defend abortion. I don't agree with that, obviously. Because abortion is prohibited. But it's privacy. That's what I